Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
I'm truly excited for you to join me on another episode of Stoma for Life. Thank you so much for all the positive feedback, especially on the last episode where I spoke with Jon Thorkildsen, the president of the European Ostomy Association, about healthcare poverty, not just in the Western world, but also in Africa. If you want to get involved, consider reaching out local charity organizations or support groups and offer your help. Your support can make a real difference. Before we dive into today's guest's incredible story, I'd like to touch on a topic that many people with chronic illnesses, including Crohn's disease, face. Have you heard of the term scanxiety? Before my life changed forever, I had no idea what it was. Since my diagnosis, though, I've become also familiar with anxiety that builds up in the days leading to medical scans and tests such as MRIs, CT scans, or colonoscopy examinations. I had my annual colonoscopy yesterday, so I know firsthand what scanxiety feels like. If you or a loved one is going through the anticipation of a scan, know that this is a real and valid feeling. I always recommend seeking support from friends, family, or support groups who understand what you're going through, as they can provide emotional comfort and reassurance. Personally, I try and stay positive and look on the bright side because I believe that constant worry and stress can contribute to illness. I'm happy to report that although the colonoscopy was challenging, not just for me, but also for the endoscopy team because of my curly colon, I am net. So there's no evidence of disease. Now, on today's show, I'm joined by Natalie Delaney, a dynamic 40-year-old mother of two and owner of her own gym. Diagnosed with Crohn's disease in 2012, Natalie has faced extraordinary challenges, including undergoing surgery for a stoma while 18 weeks pregnant with her eldest daughter. Pregnancy is a significant challenge for any woman, but imagine facing it with a serious health condition like Crohn's disease. Natalie experienced the highs and lows of pregnancy compounded by the physical and emotional strain of her diagnosis. At just 18 weeks pregnant, Natalie had to undergo critical surgery to receive a stoma, a life-saving but daunting procedure that added another layer of complexity to a journey to motherhood. I'm thrilled that Natalie is here today to share her journey of living with Crohn's disease post-surgery, managing life with a stoma, and the extraordinary challenges and triumphs of being pregnant during such a critical time. As a personal trainer and certified mental health and exercise coach, Natalie brings a unique perspective on fitness, emphasizing the freedom and joy it brings to her life. Welcome to Stoma for Life, Natalie.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure to chat to you, Natalie. Now, I spoke about scanxiety. I'm sure you know all about that, and especially during pregnancy and all through your journey with Crohn's disease. But perhaps take us back to how your journey actually started.
Yeah, so going back through to when I was at university, I knew something wasn't quite right. It was way before I was diagnosed. And several tests, several inspections, several kind of like investigations, and nothing was diagnosed. And then after a couple of years of really awful, having to live with awful symptoms, especially through my last year of university and the first couple of years of work, I eventually got the diagnosis of undetermined ulcerative colitis to start with. They weren't quite sure what it was, but I started treatment then. Fast forward a few years, managing symptoms myself, kind of flare-ups every now and again. One of my flare-ups caused a DVT, which was quite traumatic. So I obviously got a blood clot in my leg because of a flare-up. Awful dehydration caused the DVT. So I had to go on rapid medication to kind of get rid of that blood clot. But I didn't have the best of time. But on a happier note, through kind of 2011, 2012, I and my fiance were kind of we're planning our wedding. And so I'm not going to lie, I'm one of these people where I really didn't want my condition to be kind of dampening down everything. So I was trying to live the best life I possibly could do while I was preparing for my wedding. And looking back now, I realise we got married whilst I was probably in the middle of a mini flare-up. Yeah, so not the best start to kind of married life, but I was on cloud nine, had the best time ever. Quickly went to, we went on our honeymoon straight after our wedding. Had the most incredible time. We went to Dubai, we went to the Maldives, just 2 weeks of absolute bliss. And then I came back from the honeymoon and I was really low. And initially I thought, oh, this is like honeymoon blues, post-wedding blues, feeling really low. And that carried on for a couple of weeks. And I thought, this is not me. I'm normally quite a bouncy person. Took a pregnancy test and I was pregnant. And that's when the fun began. I felt pregnant. I was very low, and it literally was just that first trimester feeling of feeling quite low. And my symptoms, my Crohn's, were okay. They weren't fantastic, but they were okay. And then as I headed in towards my second trimester, I got quite poorly. And I'll never forget, it was bank holiday weekend, and my husband had to take me into A&E. And I didn't come out. I was 16 weeks pregnant at that time. And they couldn't get my condition under control. They tried everything. They even tried some drugs that they were a little bit nervous. They hadn't fully been tested in pregnancy, but it was obviously, I was quite willing to try anything to get my condition under control. I was 2 weeks in hospital. I dropped about 1.5, 2 stone. I couldn't keep food in my mouth, very kind of malnourished. And they were worried about baby and myself at that time, really, really worried. And after 2.5 weeks in hospital, the surgeon came to me and said, look, you're extremely early on in your pregnancy. We need to do everything we can to, you know, keep you alive and if possible, keep this baby alive. And he just said, we've tried everything. And I think his words were, I want to whip it out. I just want to remove. Yeah. We need to remove your colon. Mm. He was very, very, very confident that actually it could be done with keyhole surgery. And his words were, we'll just push the baby to the side.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he just said, we'll just move her to the side, just pretend that she's sleeping. She's quite small. Okay. So we'll just push her to the side, mm-hmm. and we'll do the best we possibly can. And they booked me in the next day. It was very quick. And to be honest, looking back now, it is probably him making that decision and me making that decision was probably the best thing I've done in my entire life. Yeah. Looking back now, yes, I had my large bowel removed. I had an ileostomy fitted. And they also confirmed through the pathology that I do have Crohn's disease rather than undetermined ulcerative colitis. So I've always suffered with mouth ulcers, so they did always wonder whether it was all the way through my digestive system. And to this day now, it was probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. I know that sounds a really strange thing to say, but my daughter is 11 years old. Mm-hmm. She's my eldest. I've also had a second very successful pregnancy with a stoma, and that time of my life was ridiculously traumatic thinking about now, and even listening to your introduction, just kind of sometimes it's reminding you of what you've been through, but I never look back, and yeah, it was the best decision that I've ever made.
But isn't it incredible how something this traumatic, you can now step back and say it was the best decision I've ever made, because I suppose intuitively you knew this was correct. I'm sure you had a trust also with your surgeon who said, well, let me just push her aside. I mean, yeah. she was still so small so that it could be done. So it was actually, if one would say, perfect of times, that was the most perfect of times at that stage. For you also, he says you want to preserve her life, but also your life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you only had what, 24 hours to come to terms with us. I mean, I only had 6 days to come to terms with my diagnosis, but you had literally what, one day to the next to know, okay, I'm going to live a life as an ostomate afterwards.
I don't think I'd fully got my head around that. I think my mindset, my mental health was, I don't care what you do to me, you are going to save my daughter. And as a mother, that's just naturally that takes over, doesn't it? My husband obviously was, I needed to save my wife and hopefully my daughter, but that was my mindset. I was absolutely adamant. I said, I don't care what you do. I said, you need to save this little girl. I think, that's the priority. And having to sign the consent form to give them permission that they will prioritize my health over the health of my unborn child, that was tough. But like you said, I didn't really get time to process what that would mean living with this. I didn't get a chance to think about how life would be different, how I would go through a really tough time with body confidence. I would have to kind of rebuild myself back up again. I was ridiculously slim and I had not just myself to look after, but I also had a baby to kind of, nourish and feed. But at the time it was, no, you're going to save this baby. That's all I care about.
And actually, just taking one step at a time, not looking at what could be or the challenge that could be ahead, because it's still a would or could be. It is nothing cast in stone, and every single step is a milestone and an achievement in itself. And I think you had the absolute correct mindset, just taking it one step at a time, and also wanting to obviously get better, and also saving your life and your daughter's life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why sometimes it these things can feel too overwhelming when you try and go through all the ifs and buts and maybes. And for me, it was a solid priority. Just, and I think probably sat in hospital for 2.5 weeks before the surgery, that needed to end. I didn't want my entire, that the fear was the nurses and the fear, the conversations I had with the nurses, was the fact that actually I would spend the majority of my pregnancy in hospital, working to keep me, nourished, working to keep my baby alive and well. And I really didn't want that. I wanted to enjoy the pregnancy, but that was the alternative. It was either surgery or the, obviously with the risk with anything when you're in a huge flare up, they were really worried about my bowel perforating and kind of like becoming even more poorly. So it was, I really thought, no, actually, and like you said earlier on, the confidence of the surgeon, the incredible work they do, and the confidence that he was like, no, I can do this. He actually said he hadn't operated on many pregnant women and performed that kind of procedure before. So this was kind of relatively new territory for him, but he was so confident. He says, I know exactly what we're doing. It's keyhole. I promise you, we're gonna sort this for you. And you need that as a patient.
Incredible. Yes, you do need that as a patient. And now I've got to first digest this because this is really quite an incredible story. So we're going to have a quick commercial break, and once we come back, I'd actually like to know about also your second pregnancy and an ostomy.
Fantastic.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. Now, I'm chatting to the incredible Natalie Delaney, and she has just shared with us her diagnosis and the surgery that she had to undergo through while 18 weeks pregnant. Now, you said you've had another child since stoma surgery. Can you tell us about that?
So following the surgery, and I had a successful natural labor actually. So I made it full term with my first child. She was born kind of 4 weeks before her due date, healthy. The only slight indication that I'd been poorly through her pregnancy was her her teeth weren't in the best condition when she started having teeth as a young baby. So as her teeth started coming through, and I've realised now as a baby, that's actually one of the last things that's kind of developed. So, and she did, and she was very, very slight as well. She's ever so slim. And so she didn't get much chance to put much body weight on. But yes, I had a natural labour and that all went swimmingly well. And I just kind of went strength to strength. And then a couple of years later, through my normal routine checkup with the consultant, I said, we would like another child. Now, the difficulty for me is what happens as a matter of course normally is with pregnancy, a lot of the time the body diverts the attention to, you know, kind of grow the kind of baby, and actually 70% of people's condition actually subsides and gets better through pregnancy, and 30% don't. And I fell into that 30% category. So they said, actually, my condition got worse as I got pregnant. So sitting in front of the kind of consultant saying, we would like another one. My fear was that, you know, yes, I had the surgery and I had the stoma fitted and I had no longer had a large bowel, but what could that happen again? You know, what's the risk? And they couldn't tell me.
No.
They couldn't tell me. They couldn't give me any certainty. You know, they'd taken away the part of me that was in not such a good shape, but they couldn't give me certainty as to whether that was going to happen again. But what the consultant did say was, we don't know if you need future surgery because of your condition. So he basically said, have all your children now. He says, get your children done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this stage, I was 33. So again, from a pregnancy perspective, not getting any younger. And so myself and my husband just decided to give it a go and see how I got on. And looking back now, I'm smiling because I absolutely sailed through that pregnancy. It was fantastic. Yeah. It was wonderful. It was the most incredible experience. I loved being pregnant. My body dealt really well with being pregnant. Having a stoma through pregnancy was not without its challenges, but what I did do, I tried to stay as active as I possibly could through the surgery, through the second pregnancy. I tried to stay as active as I could. I eat really well. I've got a really good relationship with nutrition, with food. So I ate really well. And so I think because of those two things, I was really well through the pregnancy. And then again, I had a fantastic second natural labour. And my husband even says now, he says that it was 8 hours start to finish and I was like a robot. He said, I just got on with it. I didn't need anything. I didn't need any help.
Oh, wow.
Initially, the hospital kind of, you know, were very concerned. They were cautious. They don't normally, obviously, deliver natural labour with a stoma. And with the pressure and giving birth and the natural labour and all that kind of thing, that doesn't come with, again, without its complications. They are nervous as to what happens with the stoma. And I have had prolapses before as well, so that's kind of, they were always concerned about that, but again, it went perfectly.
Wow.
It absolutely went perfectly, and I had another healthy little girl. She was 3 weeks early, but she was very healthy, and again, health conditions, like how she came out kind of like fighting fit. So I couldn't be happier, to be fair, and she's now 7 years old.
Oh, excellent. I mean, this is just so, it is so motivating for any young woman out there that is living in an ostomy that, yes, it can be done. I mean, what you've gone through is quite incredible. I mean, thinking of being a first-time mom, that is challenging in itself, and then dealing with a chronic illness and then a life-changing surgery in itself. But I mean, you've experienced both ends of the scale now with a second pregnancy that was, like you said, was absolutely perfect, and also delivering your child naturally.
I was adamant. I really, really wanted, because again, going through something like a C-section is extra surgery on your stomach, which I really didn't want to have if I didn't have to. And so they were quite happy that I was fit and I was well, and they were happy for me to deliver naturally, which was just like you say, an absolutely wonderful experience, and I'm lucky to have done that twice. So
would you also say that your mental attitude towards it had a significant part, or played a significant part in this?
Yes, definitely. I'm very lucky that I have I'm going to get choked up here. I have a ridiculously strong mum. My mum is so strong, and she's taught me everything. And I think having determination and resilience that this condition was not going to kind of, not going to stop me. It's not going to stop me living my life. It doesn't define me. I have respect for it. But all the way through, I was so determined that I wanted children. I wanted healthy children. I'm going to look after myself and I'm going to work around this. And I think I always credit my kind of my really strong mental health is down to how I was raised and my mum. And she continues to this day to be my absolute rock. And then I have an incredible husband, and he's we've been together since university, and he's literally been through all of this with me. And in some instances, it's been harder for him than it has for me. So just watch by the sidelines. First off, his fiance go through what I went through, and then his, you know, his wife, you know, going through this, that childbirth, and he could do absolutely nothing, you know, physically, but he's been my absolute rock. And so I've, from a mental health perspective, I feel like I got a good kind of like, you know, a good upbringing that gave me that resilience, but also I've had the incredible support of my family. So I really think that that has given me that, I don't know, that kind of resilience not to give up, not to let this kind of like this chronic illness determine everything and take over everything. And I honestly feel like that is, it's so important to, I don't know, kind of like really be self-aware in terms of on it. I'm very open. I'm very honest. I am honest when I'm down and I'm honest when I'm high. I am very open with how I feel. I'm when I am not having a great day, that's okay. You know, and again, this is, I get this from my mom. I've always been very, very open and honest, and I don't suffer in silence. And I think that's really important because I've always acknowledged how things are. And I think from a mental health perspective, that really kind of gives me that opportunity to nurture when I need to nurture and thrive when I can thrive. You know, and that's life, isn't it? Isn't it? You know, it's not all roses, isn't it? But also it doesn't have to all be down days.
Exactly. And, you know, you talking about not feeling okay also invites others to start a conversation and also perhaps share them not being okay, because a lot of people feel, well, I can't burden my friends with this, but it's not true. We all learn from each other. I found that speaking about my diagnosis has opened the conversation with my friends, and for them being more aware, raising awareness. I mean, that's what we're all about. We want to raise awareness on either chronic condition in your case or with my bowel cancer diagnosis. We want to raise awareness, and we can only do that in a dialogue and talking about it openly. And like you said, it's also okay not to be okay, and for your parents or for your family, and also your mother being such a great support network is mm-hmm. vital. And I am sure you are what your mother is to you. You are to your daughters now, because they are seeing how you're handling challenging times that others might not be handling so well. So you are the same for your daughters, like your mother is to you.
I really hope so. I really hope so. And that is a huge driving force behind me. They are my kind of my inspiration. They are my the reason I do this for myself, but I do this for them, you know, and this is kind of their my reason for, and I really, this is one of the things linking back to kind of like fitness and my journey into becoming a personal trainer. I became very aware that through the pregnancies and through my first pregnancy, and then through after having both of my daughters, I didn't feel strong. I didn't feel physically strong. I've always been quite slight, and I've always been relatively kind of like I say, good relationship with food, but I didn't feel physically strong. And I made a promise to myself that if this condition ever flares up again, if this condition ever knocks me back, I would build the strength to make sure that I can come back fighting fit. And I was absolutely determined to become a strong mum. And so after my second daughter, she must have been about 6 months old. That's it. I started to teach myself how to work with weight training. I joined the gym. I can't believe I did it now, because of work and because of childcare. I started going to the gym at 5:30 in the morning, and on a Sunday night at 8 o'clock, because that's when I could fit it in. And I fell in love with resistance-based training, working with weights. It made me feel really strong. And that was my journey then. That's kind of like, I absolutely fell in love with it. And it was that I was adamant I wanted to be a strong mom. I was adamant that I did not want this condition to kind of hold me back. I wanted to be that kind of strong role model. And that's what I live for today.
Yeah, incredible. Absolutely incredible. Now, we're going to have a quick commercial break again, but I want to hear all about your fitness training journey afterwards. So we'll
Brilliant.
Be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I'm joined today by Natalie Delaney. She is a personal trainer and certified mental health and exercise coach. And we've touched on the subject of fitness, also in an ostomy. Now, you said you hadn't previously, but now after surgery and after having your two children, you also want to get your fitness back. So anybody listening out there, like myself, in an ostomy, fitness obviously is a big topic. I always try and, I try and do my best, but I don't think my best is good enough yet. And I absolutely commend you on having the dedication that you had by sharing now that you actually went to the fitness studio like very early in the morning. I mean, that's true dedication. But perhaps you can share with us, if there's an ostomate listening now who wants to get back into fitness, what the key things are, how you can go about it, and that you actually enjoy it.
Yeah, that is what it was for me and still is now. Like I said, I was adamant that I wanted to kind of build strength. And after doing a little bit of research, I realized that it wasn't all about looking thin, looking slim. It was actually, as a female, I needed to actually build a little bit of muscle. And I think because my purpose, my reason behind it was driven by wanting to be the strong mom that I knew I could be. Mentally, I felt very strong, but physically, I thought I need to match this. And so I fell in love with working with weight. I think what helped my journey was the fact that I took it at my own pace. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's condition is so individual. Everybody's symptoms and what they have to work around is so individual that actually there isn't a right or a wrong way or a set timeline behind any of this. What I did was I set out a weekly schedule that I knew I could fit in my week alongside looking after the girls and my work at the time. And what I did was I played around with it. I had fun with it. So I taught myself, I did some research on the internet, and I taught myself some of the key exercises. But what I did was I played with it. There was very little ego to it. There was no expectation. I didn't enter any competitions or anything like that. I was basically learning how my body moved. Mm-hmm. And understanding how my body moved. And so I started off with body weight exercises and really kind of started from scratch. And then I would add a little bit of resistance as I found those much easier. And I started right from scratch, basically. But I think because I had fun with it, there was no expectation. And part of the, you talk about kind of scan anxiety. Well, something that I work a lot with my current clients is gym anxiety. Gym anxiety is a huge thing. And especially at my point in time, I was, you know, a female. I didn't start going to the gym until I was 35. And I had a stoma bag that obviously I had to work around as well. So the anxiety of being in the gym, of all of a sudden my stoma bag filling up halfway through a workout, I was petrified of it leaking. I was Always worried about making sure I could get to the toilet in time. And that's on top of not really knowing how the equipment worked, being in a gym with several other people who clearly knew what they were doing. And I think one thing for me was just channeling out, being prepared, but channeling out all of those kind of things and just having fun with it. And that really helped me focus on, like I say, kind of overall movements, how the movements felt, not rushing myself into anything. I think sometimes we set ourselves up for so much an expectation of what we should and shouldn't be able to do. I'd been signed off by my consultant. Everybody was quite happy with my physical health at that point in time. And so once I'd had that, I was like, right, that's me. I'm doing this. There are certain exercises where I still can't do now. So a lot of core exercises I have to be really careful with because it sends my stomach into spasm. And then that impacts on my stoma. So it she just doesn't like it. She's called Fel, by the way. She's called Fel. If I refer to Fel, that's my bag.
Yeah. We all have names for them.
Absolutely. So Fel, she doesn't like certain crunching type core exercises. And so I've just learned to switch that for a different type of exercise just to help with core strength, but ones that don't irritate her. There's other exercises where there's pressure on the stomach, which again, I just work around. I have to be very careful. I adjust the position. I stick to a kind of a relatively low weight, those kinds of things, just to kind of work around the condition and think, well, if I can't do that, what can I do? What might have the same effect? And so I think for anybody that's wanting to kind of start out and anybody that would come to me to ask for advice around, you know, working out and kind of training with kind of like an ostomy, I really would recommend A, taking it at your own pace, starting off low and just thinking, I really want to move my body. You know, I want to feel what it feels like to be able to kind of do, what does my legs feel like when I can do a squat or I can do a step up? You know, what does it feel like when I get into the press up position and I can do a press up, and just kind of really start from the basics and build it up, but in your own time. Because the joy that comes from improving, the joy that comes from, you know, it's kind of like the joy that comes from seeing progress week to week, thinking, oh, actually, I'm getting a little bit stronger. And even the increase in hormones and the endorphins that you get from just moving your body has such, and this leads on to kind of why I've become certified as a mental health and exercise coach, because I think for me, the mental health benefits of exercise in some ways far outweigh, well, not far outweigh, but they're so significant compared to the physical benefits of exercise. And I think starting training, even with having a stoma and living with Crohn's disease, I think the exercise is one thing that just keeps me going. It really does keep me going. It makes me feel alive. It makes me feel well. I'm connected to my body. You know, I now run and I get the endorphins from kind of like going out into nature and doing a run. And the difference in terms of mood from when I don't feel like it, I'm having a bit of a low day, I'm not feeling great. The minute I've come out of the gym, I'm absolutely buzzing again and I feel great. And a lot of the time what I do is I just adjust what I'm doing. So if that day I've only got 60% to give, I only train 60%. I don't go full throttle, you know, and I just adjust my plan depending on what my body feels like and what my body feels like at that point in time.
Yeah. So actually what you've said now in a nutshell is for everybody just to go at their own pace, not look at other people who might be so much further down their journey, because obviously your condition and your pace is an individual one. And also celebrate those little journeys when you see, or those little victories when you see, oh, wow, I'm getting back into shape, and perhaps not putting too much pressure on yourself, but celebrating those little victories as well.
Absolutely. It absolutely kind of, I could have said it better myself. I think it's just switching the dialogue and thinking, well, hang on a minute, last week I couldn't do this. Whereas this week I can. And just showing up for yourself. just showing up for yourself and thinking, you know, I'm going to do this for me. I'm not doing this for anybody else. I'm not going to try and compete. I'm not going to compare myself to anybody else. It's just kind of like the version I was this time last year. That's, you know, my competition is myself and what I can do. And if there's something you can't do, well, okay, what can I do? What's the alternative? Okay. You know, and then even showing up for yourself when you're not feeling it fully. You're well, but you're not feeling it fully. It's like, well, again, how can I adjust this? What can I do? Even just moving for 15, 20 minutes, it can instantly change your state and it can just make you feel alive again. And I think we really underestimate the connection with our bodies, that we live in our heads a lot. Yeah. And it's not until you move your body that it almost gives you a thank you afterwards.
Yeah.
You get a hormone boost, you get an endorphin rush. All of a sudden, all the cells in your body have got the oxygen they were looking for. Your heart rate is increased. You feel incredible. And it's like your body saying, thank you. Thank you for moving today. You know, and then that relays back to your brain, and your brain goes, oh, I feel great about myself. And that just builds. And I think this is kind of like, it's my purpose is to get people moving and to overcome the block sometimes that is we're living with a condition. It's kind of understanding what can I do, what is possible today. I might not be able to give 100% like I say, but today actually I'm going to switch that gym session that I was planning, and I'm going to go out for a good nice solid walk for half an hour and get my heart rate up a little bit. And I guarantee nobody ever regrets exercise, nobody ever regrets movement. And it's just really, it's really powerful, even with living with, you know, a chronic condition, as I do.
Beautifully said. Now we're almost at the end of the show, but if people would like to get hold of you, how would they go about it? Have you got a social media account they can follow?
Yes. So I am a personal trainer, and most of my contact is through Instagram. So my business is Mission Fit with Natalie. You can find me Mission Fit Natalie on Instagram and on Facebook as well. And I'm kind of somebody who I love to support other people. Any people who've got any questions or anything about kind of movement and exercise, living with a condition, then please reach out, because it's something that, as you mentioned earlier, I'd love to be able to share a message to say, you know, whilst things might feel really tough right now, this is not everything. You know, things do lift up, and there are things that you will be able to do to give people that hope that actually there can be fun, and there can be joy. There can be kind of, you know, life in living with a chronic condition such as Crohn's disease or living with a stoma. And so, yeah, absolutely. Please drop me a message.
And I absolutely love what you said, like showing up for yourself. Because you're not doing it for anybody else but yourself. And because you're doing it for yourself, obviously your crowd, your group, everybody is benefiting, because they can see how well you're doing, how you're thriving in going about your life in a positive manner, in doing fitness the way you're doing on your level. It rubs off. I mean, it's that ripple effect that you have on other people's lives as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Last week I went to a bit of a mini festival, and it's not a long story, I'll be quick this one, but yeah, so I went to a little music festival, and we got there, I was dancing all night. It was like a 90s dance festival type thing, and that's just my era. Mm-hmm. Having the best time of my life, and all of a sudden foul my stoma prolapse. I think the gravity and dancing just was too much for her. Now I've coped with this a few times in the past. I know what happens. And so, much to the delight of the security guards, I lay down on the floor. And I know after kind of half an hour or so, she starts to sort herself out and she calms back down again. I just have to have my stomach muscles relax. My friends panicked a little bit. They were laying down with me, worrying about me. What can you fetch this out the other? And I just said, look, I'm okay. Yes, it's a little bit painful, but I just need half an hour. And after half an hour, she calmed down. So I got up and I started dancing again. And I finished the night. And it's quite interesting, because, yes, it was uncomfortable, but it didn't ruin the night. I kind of worked out how to cope with these things now. And I'll never forget my friend last week. She was absolutely in awe because she said, I cannot get over you having to live with this condition. A lot of people completely forget, but she said how you coped through that and didn't let it ruin the night. You got up and you carried on dancing again. She was absolutely in awe. And I think it's just, I forget now that actually I've developed coping mechanisms. And I'm adamant this is not going to affect me. This is not going to ruin my experiences in life. Yeah. I just need to work out how I can make the most of them.
But this is so motivating for myself and also for my listeners to hear you speak with so much joy about it, because you have learned to listen to your body. Accept yeah. your body the way it is, not fight it, because I think as soon as you fight something and there's resistance, it doesn't work. You have gone to from strength to strength, listening to your body, accepting it, dealing with it, and embracing life. I think you're the whole package.
Thank you.
You're the whole package. And I get with your friends as well, and family and friends, they are bystanders. They are only spectators in this.
Yeah.
And we, the ones living in this condition, we have basically worked out how to get the best out of it for ourselves by, like That's I said, right. listening to our bodies and going with the flow, actually, not yeah. resisting it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've gone through the journey, whereas I don't think some people always have the opportunity to go through that with you.
Yeah.
They just watch. Mm. And I think sometimes it can be quite difficult for them to acknowledge what you're going through and,
yeah.
you know, feeling that empathy, that compassion for you and thinking, gosh, how would I feel if I was going through that? And it's like, well, I've come to terms with this, though, and I found a way that works for me.
Exactly. Natalie, like I said, we've sadly come to the end of the show. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing this incredible journey. And to all our listeners out there, I'm sure, like me, you have found this absolutely inspiring. Thank you so much,
Thank
Natalie.
You. Thank you for having me.
All the best going forward, and take care. Bye for now.
I'm happy. Thank you.